Welcome back to a special edition of the John Gambling Show. It's Red Kettle Day to benefit the Salvation Army on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, broadcasting from Michael Jordan's The Steakhouse NYC at Grand Central Terminal in New York City, here are John Gambling and special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. Yes, we are broadcasting from this absolutely magnificent hall, Grand Central Terminal. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, good morning. Thank you very much for coming up.
Happy to be here, but glad we're indoors. Chilly outside.
Nasty, isn't it?
No, nasty. It happens every winter. It gets cold, and we're surprised. I don't know why.
Well, listen, just a little work here. The $110,000, thank you very much, everybody. And this hour, everybody that calls in, it will be eligible for the Andy Pettit jersey and baseball. So come on, call in, make a pledge. You don't have to, but make a pledge. That's what this is all about. 800-234-1710. Mr. Mayor, we've been talking all morning long about the importance of the Salvation Army and organizations like it. As it integrates into the city, it's critical, isn't it?
Yeah, the Salvation Army is one of our partners in taking care of the homeless. And the city's been doing business with them for an awful long time. They are an organization that I've been supporting personally. And they're not the only one. There are other organizations also. But Salvation Army has been around an awful long time and very important. The city can't do a lot of this stuff itself, so we have to contract out. And with the Salvation Army, you know, you get reputable people and good services for the clients, as we call them, people who are really in need. Salvation Army recognizes that all of us aren't as lucky as you and me, and we have an obligation to take care of others.
Yeah, and we've noticed that this morning, obviously, with the vast number of donations that we have gotten. And again, we thank everybody very, very much. You and I, on our weekly get-togethers, talk about money too many times, but it is what makes the world go round and greases the wheels here. MTA story, shortfall, worse than expected?
Shocker, I think is a good word. New guy comes in, takes over the MTA, Jay Walder. I think he's going to be a great guy, do a great job. But all of a sudden, the Albany legislature and the governor and then the agreement that they all came to takes away $143 million from the MTA. It's $143 million for this past year that all of a sudden they're not going to get. So that's part of the deficit. Then if you didn't get it this year, it's kind of unlikely you'd get it next year. And if you're going to pass a budget for next year, I don't see how you put that $143 million in. So now you're up to roughly $300 million. Then the mobility tax, as they call it, which is really just a tax on businesses in the whole region that the MTA supports, in some places better than others, tax revenues were estimated to net the MTA $1 billion. Instead, it's only going to net them something like $800 million at the moment. Now, maybe later on revenues come in greater. Nobody really knows. But Jay can't plan on more than what's come in so far. Now you're up to $500 million in a deficit. And then there's also the problem of what happens if the MTA were to lose their lawsuit trying to stop this contract that was awarded without any money behind it.
You're talking about with the TWU.
Sure. I mean, I'm very sympathetic with the TWU workers. I've always believed in paying your workers as much as you possibly can. But in this case, there is no money, and the MTA workers are upset and say, why stop the contract? The contract should only be given if there was money, and taking capital monies and doing it is just the worst possible financial planning you could do. Rather than take those monies, the state has just got to understand. They've got to come up with money to help this organization. But going into next year with $500 million deficit, Jay's going to have to come up with a budget in the next week or so that we're going to have to vote on, and it's got to pass the Loft test. It's got to look like it's got a chance of being accurate. You can never really know, but I'm sure in it is going to be station closings and route closings, buses and less subway service, and we should be going in the other direction. If we want people to leave their cars at home and make commerce work better so we have more jobs and have more tax revenues down the road and get more people onto the subways and buses so they have more revenue, you got to have more service. Keep cutting back service, you're going to cut back your revenues. It's a spiral down. And Jay may not have any other choice at this point, but I think it just shows the legislature talked about addressing the MTA's problems, and in the end, it did not take care of what they need. And I think every organization that gets money from the state is really worried. We're worried about education. The state government took monies out of next year's stimulus monies and used them this year. Well, the stimulus monies next year, like the stimulus monies this year, were coming to the city in the form of aid for education. And I don't, at this point, fortunately, we don't have to come up with a budget with the city council until the end of June. But if you ask me today what we can count on, I think everything is up in the air.
And add to that problem, you've got this health care situation, which you're talking about in Washington, and you and the governor have sent the letter to the
Senate.
Senate
bill would be a disaster for us. The Senate's bill basically takes $1 billion out of New York City and sends it to states where they had to buy votes, is a nice way to phrase it. We have taken care of people in this city in the ways other states haven't. This legislation penalizes us for doing the right thing. And it also, another $600 million would come out of our Health and Hospitals Corporation budget. And if that were to pass, and hopefully the Senate bill won't be the version that passes or they'll fix it in committee, but that would cost us $600 million a year, and we would have to close all of our community clinics. We have nearly 100 of them around the city, and close our home care service. I mean, this would be a disaster. But the Health and Hospitals Corporation can't print money. I mean, see, the federal government prints money. We have to balance our budget. Our Health and Hospitals Corporation has to balance its budget. And this is about the most unfair piece of legislation I have ever seen. It penalizes New York for doing what's right, and it sends the money to states who haven't been willing to help all of their constituents. And it was done more, it looks to me, like for political reasons, because it went to the monies went to states where the votes of the senators were in question for the health care bill.
The other aspect of this is that if you put that sort of extra $1 billion burden on the state of New York and the city of New York, you then on top of it take the state issues, the dollars.
It just
budget.
Cascades
it
down.
It just does. I mean, what are we New Yorkers supposed to do?
Well, what I have kept I've said again and again and again, anybody that thinks when the federal government or the state government cuts back aid to New York City, that New York City taxpayers are going to be able to make up the difference, they are just wrong. We have a deficit. We had projected our revenues very conservatively, so maybe now things are somewhat better. Instead of a $5 billion deficit, if I had to guess today, I'd say it's a $4 billion deficit. We've asked all our agencies to cut $1.5 billion out of their expenses over the next 18 months. That is an enormous challenge for them, but I think we can do it and keep the essential services. We're still going to have a couple of $1 billion deficit after that. And if the state and the federal government cut things back, we just do not have the money to make it up. So if services decline for that they're paying for, they're the ones that are going to have to sit there and decide whether they really want to do that to the people of New York. But the taxpayers just doesn't have the money to make up for it.
I was pleased to see the governor take a position that you've taken for a long time about Wall Street and the dollars that come out of there and the pay scales.
Well, somebody said, you know, in Detroit, if the elected officials were blasting the automobile industry, they'd be ridden out of town on a rail. If you go to Texas and you blasted the oil industry, you'd be ridden out of. In California, it's high tech. We're trying to drive out the industry that is supporting us. Now, it's not the only one. Thank goodness we've been working for the last 8 years and diversifying around the boroughs and across industries, but we still are very dependent on this industry, and we want them to come here. And I was fascinated in London. They said they were going to tax earnings of people in the business. France said that they might do the same thing. Today, I think the Prime Minister of England backed off a little bit, but that would help. As long as we don't pile on, that would be good for us, because some of these companies would move to the United States.
That's it.
Move
you
to
can do this business anywhere.
Well, we can go down either road. We can either use that as cover and pile on, or we can use it as an opportunity to have a future and bring those businesses here. And I guarantee you there is every canton in Switzerland has been on the phone with every one of these countries saying, see, move to Switzerland. That's not good for it's not good for England. Gordon Brown has got a big problem with that. Sarkozy has got a big problem with that. We don't want to have that problem here. We don't want to have people leaving. And people can vote with their feet. That's what.
And the people with the wherewithal can do it very easily.
The concentration of companies and of individuals who pay taxes is very strong. And if you drive out those people who are creating jobs in the city, we're all going to suffer. If you drive out those that are paying the taxes, we're not going to be able to afford the police and fire and teachers and all the other things that we want to do. And we are in a competitive world. People can go elsewhere. They can leave New York for Florida or Connecticut. They can leave the United States or England or France or for Switzerland if it's a company or branches of the company. They can do business in any place.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got to take care of a little business as well. This morning, our business is raising money for the Salvation Army. 800-234-1710. 800-234-1710. Anybody that makes a donation, calls that number right now, will be eligible. We're going to have a drawing. We're going to choose one person from everybody that calls between 9 and 10 for an Andy Pettit signed shirt and also a baseball. So get in on that. Right here, let's go check the traffic and weather. Take a break. Come back to Michael Bloomberg in just a moment. JJ. All right. Thank you very much. We are here at Grand Central raising money for the Salvation Army special day, our Red Kettle Day. Don't forget, online, you can donate all day long, and we have some silent auction items there as well at WOR710.com, and they will be up till 8 o'clock tonight. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here this morning, and there's a story that's just sort of starting here about the Kingsbridge Armory up in the Bronx.
Kingsbridge Armory is an old armory. It's a big, beautiful building, which the city spends a lot of money on every year to maintain, but we're maintaining it as empty. And it's in an area where half the people, studies show, leave the Bronx to shop. They go up to Westchester or over into Connecticut to shop, and we want stores and jobs in the Bronx. And there's a developer related who hopefully will build in that spot. But the problem is there are some people who say that the developer should, who's putting $300 million into this building that's been empty for 30 years, and they say, oh, we're giving him a sweetheart deal. Well, he's the only one, incidentally, that's willing to put some money in. But he says, look, if I've got a I can't be in the have as a condition to rent space to the retail tenants who will fill this, I can't be in a position of having to tell them or what they have to pay. And everybody wants people to be able to make more money and have good jobs. And the more they make, the better we all are. And the more benefits they have, the better we all are. But it's not, the developer says that he's not going to dictate that. And it's certainly not the city's business to tell the developer what he has to pay.
And who wants to do this?
Well, there are some people who are going to vote. The city council has to vote, and there are some members of the city council who say, oh, no, we don't want it if it's not, unless we dictate what the developer, what the tenants have to pay their employees. This city is not going to get into that business. And then some people say, well, find a ways where you can have a program that will essentially do the same thing, but it doesn't look like you're subsidizing. We aren't going to do that, period. I mean, if they vote this down, and hopefully the vote will be today, because if you wait until Monday, I think it's never going to happen. We have to get this done. Either today's the day to stand up and say, do you want to end this craziness of no jobs or fewer jobs in the Bronx, of people leaving the Bronx to shop, or do you want to have the developer totally walk away, and we will not find anybody for... Took 30 years to get to this point. Who knows how much it'd take to the next thing? Well, plain and simple, the Bronx, we need more of this kind of space. We have a developer willing to do it. It's not the city's business, not government's business to tell companies that they should pay more than whatever. There are federal minimum wage laws, and those are fine. But after that, across the street from the Kingsbridge Armory, there are stores that pay less than what the tenants in the Kingsbridge Armory would be required to pay.
So that puts them behind the economic eight ball right away.
No, it doesn't, because they're just not going to rent. And, just some of the elected officials think that they can run roughshod. It's like some of these community benefit agreements. We make a deal, and then the locals come in and say, well, we'll picket you, we'll do this unless you give us extra stuff. That's outside of the government, and it should never happen. And we've said this time, it is just not going to happen. We're not going to do these community benefits agreements, and we're not going to make any deal behind the scenes that accomplishes something that we're afraid to talk about in the public.
These sort of questions, which come up on a fairly regular basis about development around the city, whether it's out in the Whitestone area.
Well, the argument is if it's public money, the public has a right to dictate, although generally this really isn't the public's money, or a very small percentage of it is. So $300 million is private money that would go into this. It relieves the city from having to pay for the armory all the time. I mean, there's some real good benefits here. There's a couple thousand construction jobs that if this gets voted down today, we're not going to have those construction jobs. Come with me. I'll take you to Union Hall, and you'd go and explain to the construction workers why they're not going to have the jobs, or the people that clean the building and the doormen and that sort of thing. They want those jobs. Explain to them why they're not going to have those jobs. The bottom line is the marketplace is the marketplace, and remember the king who tried to stop the tide from coming in. Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And again, let's separate ourselves slightly from the personalities involved here. What is the advantage to trying to require this?
Well, there's probably one union that says, or small political party that says, oh, this is what we should do. We should dictate. They fundamentally don't understand that New York City is in competition. The competition, for example, is with Westchester and with Connecticut for retail stores. We try to keep some stores out of this city, and the public votes with their feet. And incidentally, the very people in many cases who say, oh, I don't want them here, they go out
across the border. You're talking about the big box stores.
Sure.
Yeah,
I mean, big box stores are a real problem for small stores, and we're trying to help small stores. But there's no question what the public wants. They go and they buy in the big box stores. The only question is, are they going to be here in the city giving city people jobs and giving city people more access to products and giving city the city coffers tax revenue so we can pay our teachers and pay our cops and pay our firefighters? Or are they going to help Westchester or Connecticut?
The sea is changing on this one, though, because I know out in Queens off the Long Island Expressway, they are building a brand new mall that has a couple of the big
and a new one in East Harlem on the old Washburn Wireworks place. Now there's a box stores. You go up and look at the Bronx. One of the great things that's happened to the Bronx is the Bronx Terminal Market. If you remember, there were a handful of people who would lose their jobs, and yes, they did, and hopefully we've gotten them all jobs or training so they can get jobs. But today there are these enormous stores where people are coming to shop, and the number of jobs created is quite dramatic. And you can't just sit there and say, well, we don't want to hurt a handful of people or displace them, or really it's not hurting or displacing. It's just a little bit of inconvenience because hopefully we can find jobs for them. But the bottom line is you have to keep building and developing. That's what the public wants.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's sit tight. Let's go to our half-hour break here. We are talking with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, as I do each and every Friday. A different venue this morning, a little different landscape, but we are doing this for the Salvation Army. Very important, and we still need your help. 800-234-1710, 800-234-1710. Everybody that bids right now and calls that number, if you call that number, you will be eligible for a Andy Pettit signed shirt and baseball. Tote Board Joe is here, and he's got not only the news, but he's got some more information, too.
All right, let's give you the news.
All right, Joseph, thank you very much. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. And, Joe, while you're here, earlier in the week you were saying that you thought that it was a mistake for the mayor to veto the five-minute grace period on the meters.
I thought you have a great opportunity to discuss it.
Well,
I mean, it's already a done deal, but I thought it's a minor accommodation. 5 minutes, because you know how difficult it is to get around in the city, and it's hard to be precise.
Why does the 5 minutes make a difference? How do you envision Do you envision the traffic agent standing there looking at his or her watch?
Well, they do now. They do now.
So all they're going to do it is 5 minutes later. Why does that change anything? But now everybody that gets a ticket is going to go before the judge and say, "Oh, you weren't there. My meter ran out only 4 minutes before I got the ticket."
Mr. Mayor, that's the same argument I've been having all week with him.
I would never say it is a dumb piece of legislation. But if one were so crass as to say it, you might use those words. The only thing that the city council passed that mirrors this is the clergy parking bill.
What is that?
I also vetoed. We, for, I'm sure, thousands of years, certainly for many years, have given parking placards to clergy members. The new bill requires us to give parking placards to out-of-state clergy members. Now, why do clergy members need parking permits? Well, because they'll be able to park easier. But what about you and everybody else who wants to park easier? And I will say that most times you don't have to rush to be there so quickly.
Well, there are some gotcha, the issue of gotcha tickets, but parking is difficult.
This doesn't solve that problem. This just makes it a lot worse. Because I don't know what the judges are going to do now.
He's very hard-headed.
Yeah, okay.
Well, want to solve the parking problem, you could, for example, do the same thing. You can raise the rates. You could make the meters go 65 minutes for whatever you put into them. But to leave the confusion where nobody is going to know when they got their ticket, and it doesn't solve anything. The parking agents are still going to give you the ticket.
You're wasting your breath here.
I know it, but I explained to John that even when you pay a bill, you have a due date, and they give you a grace period.
Yeah, but I never understood that. You want to get together at 4 o'clock? Let's show up at 4 o'clock. You want to get together at 4:10? Tell us. Let's say 4:10. But here, you don't show up for an hour,
right?
Okay, and you get your ticket.
Correct.
You show up an hour and 3 minutes later, and you say, "Oh, I shouldn't have got that ticket."
Right.
Now you're going to show up 65 minutes later, plus two or three, and you're still going to get your ticket. Why you think you're better off?
No excuses after 5 minutes.
Jesus. Make it 10. Make it anything you want.
You're wasting your time, Mr. Mayor.
No, we're going to give them the same number of tickets. Only it's going to cost us a lot of money in fighting all of them. That's what's going to happen.
Because of the confusion?
The confusion.
And the city council says they're going to override your veto. Do you think they will?
On both that and the clergy bill. Well, I don't know. There were two people that voted against the 5 minutes and five that voted against the clergy, all out of 51. What do you think?
Okay, there you go. That's going to happen. All right. We're sitting here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, as we do on a Friday. Can you say anything of the story in the New York Post this morning about the potential replacement for Fire Commissioner Nick Scabetta? With a lady by the name of Mylon Dinrester, is that it?
We are working on interviewing people, and I would never discuss, who we talk to or what those conversations are. When we have something to announce, we'll have something to announce. We just don't do it through the newspapers.
Okay, and I'm assuming that when you do a search for positions like this, you go.
We are doing a nationwide, in some cases worldwide, but that's overstating it generally, nationwide search. We've talked to a number of great candidates from in and outside of the city, and we will pick the person that I think is best able to take the best fire department in the world and take it forward. We're going to face new challenges. If you take a look today, I think only like 1/16 of the fire department responses are for structural fires. Today, what the fire department does is they show up either in an ambulance or in an engine when there's a heart attack or an accident, and they provide medical care. It's another ways to get some more value out of some of the best and most dedicated and bravest people that have ever worked for the city. But our budget is clearly going to require us to spend less at the fire department, just like it's going to require us to spend less at virtually every other department. And one of the things I'm really looking for is who can take this department and try new things and make it better. For example, one of the new things we've done is we've combined the 911 operations of police and fire, and it is working spectacularly well. Some people that don't like anything complain and just give out false information, but the bottom line is we've reduced response times again by doing this. Before, you'd call up one operator, it'd answer your phone, and then if it was the police thing, they'd take it, and if it was a fire thing, they'd pass it on to somebody else, and you'd have to take all the information again. And that slowed down all of the sending out the dispatching of fire engines and ambulances. Now we've tightened that up. As a matter of fact, on Thanksgiving morning, every holiday I try to go and visit some agency of the city government where the people have to work on the holiday. I figure if they got to work, should work too.
You might as well show up, right?
Sure, so we bring some cookies from Gracie Mansion. I get a chance to talk to them. It's quiet generally, so you get a real chance to, hear what their concerns are. And I went over to visit the new 911 facility, and we're building a backup to that one. The technology we have is just amazing. You'd be shocked at what we really have brought in and can do, and it's still getting implemented, and there's another big step of integration coming in a couple of months. But we do this very carefully. But we have the best fire department in the world. I'm committed to keeping it the best, and I'm committed to keeping it the best and making it even better and spending less money, because we don't have any choice. Anybody that thinks that we have a lot of money just isn't being realistic. I don't care who they are or what they want the truth to be. That is the truth.
What will happen to union contracts with that statement and the statements that you have on a continuing basis with the shortage of money? What happens next year?
There will be unions that will work with the city and find ways to do more with less and protect their members. And there'll probably be some unions that will choose not to do that. That's up to them. But we cannot continue to spend the amount of money we have. We just don't have it. We can't walk away from the basic services. That was the mistake we made in the past. So if you can't cut the services, and if you can't raise taxes to get more money, how do you do it? Well, there's two things. One, you build your tax base, you get more people to move to the city. Driving them out is not a smart thing to do. We want those people that work in every industry, though, particularly those industries where they make a lot of money because they pay a lot more taxes. And we want to find ways to do more with less. And you have to make some hard choices. We can't do everything. And people think we should have a firehouse on every block. We should have a cop on every corner. We should have a school in every neighborhood. It would and a teacher for every kid. It would be great if we could, but that's not the real world.
That figure you threw out before, 1/16 of all the calls to the fire department are for fires? That's amazing.
Because the fire department has been part of that, and the building department.
Their success.
That's exactly right. I mean, if we never had a fire, that would be the most wonderful thing. But that's probably not realistic. It's like if we never had crime and the cops never had to arrest anybody, that would be the most wonderful thing. That's not likely either. But the fire department does inspections. They do training. They help us change building codes to require sprinklers and different kinds of material and construction that doesn't burn as fast. The fire department trains its people. We have more. We've doubled, basically, the amount of time a probie goes through the fire academy because the fire department today has to face things that they never envisioned 20 years ago. There's terrorism threats, which nobody really thought about until we didn't learn the lesson in 93 when there was a bomb, and 8 years later we had 9/11. It's 8 years later after 9/11, and let me tell you, we have learned our lesson, and our fire department trains and trains and trains. Terrorism, hazmat, different kinds of things that they had not in the past had to face.
Communications.
The fire department today, the firefighter of today is better educated, better trained, better able to respond and think on his or her feet than ever before in history, and better led.
Let me ask you, Eric Holder was in town inspecting the federal courthouse this week. Ray Kelly went along for the ride as well. And
I sent Ed Schuyler, a deputy mayor. He was there, and there are a number of others. And we've got to work with the federal government. As a matter of fact, we had
a bigger job than if earlier anticipated.
I think that the more we've looked at it, the costs keep going up, and we've explained that to Holder. When Holder called me, I think it was a Friday morning right after our radio show, and he said that they wanted to do the trials here, and I asked why, and he said traditionally they hold the trials where the crimes are committed. And I said, well, look, this is your decision, but whatever you guys decide, the NYC Police Department and the other agencies will provide whatever security is needed. And we want you to pay for it. And I'm optimistic, although, the federal government, they owe us money they have a requirement to pay us for the protection that we give to the UN. And it's hard-pressed to find the money, but they've sent over because they haven't. But we will do this. And I met with Air Force General, who's responsible for coordinating the federal government's efforts with cities around the country. And he wanted to know what we do and how we can work better together. New York is very different than other places because we have a lot of we do a lot of things ourselves. We have a lot of equipment ourselves that other places haven't reached into their pockets and been willing to buy and pay for. Although some cases, rural areas are very different than big cities. But even among big cities, New York does a lot more. That's why we're safer. This is the safest big city. It's the safest city of any size, almost any size, over 100,000. And The reason it is we spend a lot of money and we work hard and we prepare.
Did the Attorney General or anyone else give you any indication on timing, on when any and all, or how far
I think it's all up in the air. But, you know, these things take a lot of time.
A lot of time. We're talking years, probably.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think that's a fair, you know, I don't think it's 5 years, but it could conceivably be a couple of years. Certainly would be many months. And when it's going to start, I don't know. I don't think they know. They're trying to get all their ducks in order. It's not easy. The planning that goes into something like this is quite significant. But when they get here, they will find out that whether it's a convention or a trial or New Year's Eve or anything else, the NYPD and the other emergency responding services, Office of Emergency Management and the Fire Department and the Health Department, everybody else, we're well-trained and we work hard and we'll make sure everybody's safe.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang tight. We've got one more break to do. Let's do it right here. It's 9:46. J.J. Kennedy's got traffic and weather. J.J. All right, Mr. O'Reilly, thank you very much. Yes, indeed, 800-234-1710. We have done very well, but there's still lots of need out there and still plenty of time. Just want to remind you that throughout the entire Christmas holiday season, you'll be able to deposit into our digital Red Kettle online at WOR710.com. And through 8 o'clock tonight, the auction items will be on. They'll close out at 8 o'clock tonight. And right now, as of now, you will have a 1 in 54 chance to win the ND Pettit raffle. The signed shirt, the signed baseball. Anybody that calls, anybody that makes a donation right now in the next 10 minutes will be eligible at 800-234-1710. 800-234-1710. Come on, thank you very much for your help so far this morning. Let's do whatever we can. Mr. Mayor, you are off to Copenhagen.
Off to Copenhagen. I'm going to give a speech or two about what we're doing in New York City. We just passed, the city council, led by Christine Quinn, just passed a new green building code. It changed slightly to reflect the economy changing, but we're still going to create 18,000 jobs. Our old plan had 19,000, but it's essentially the same. And this plan will, over a few years, reduce the city's carbon emissions by 4.75%. The original plan hoped for 5%, but and it'll take some years. But as things wear out, you've got to have a different standard, more efficient stuff.
Are you still hopeful about windmills on buildings and other?
Well, I never said windmills on buildings.
I'm
actually going to visit a windmill farm in Copenhagen. Look, do you want us to be dependent on foreign oil and shipping our monies over to people who are subsidizing? Okay. Then the alternative is to do something about it. There are alternatives, switching to natural gas rather than to having dependent on heavy oil in heating buildings, having much more fuel-efficient cars. For years, Congress actually required better efficiency in cars, made an enormous amount of progress, and in the mid-'80s, they just lost courage and stopped. Trying to protect Detroit, they basically destroyed Detroit because other companies that weren't protected went and made cars, and the public voted with their feet and bought them. So we've got to do that. You can use solar, you can use wind, you can use less energy. All of those are parts of the puzzle, and you can't have it both ways. You can't complain about our dependence on foreign oil. You can't complain that if your child is you're breathing air. Do you want that air to be cleaner or not? I mean, it's your life. You make the decision, but you can't have it both ways.
And the city is studying that air, and it's finding some very interesting things.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of places where it'll be fascinating when we announce the results next week, but the preliminary results that I've seen says that there is pollution in the air in a lot of places where people didn't think there was. And, you know, it's some kinds of pollution come from trucks and cars, so you would expect higher pollution near big roads. Some come from buildings, so which is very different. Where you have lots of big buildings, you tend to not have the big highways. There, it's a different kind of pollution. And each of these different patterns say different things, but also they have different health effects. But we're trying to measure the real air, and we've done the winter measurements now in cold air. We'll see what happens in the summer, where the patterns may be different because people don't heat their buildings. They cool their buildings.
And you've also got sort of a more stagnant air system in the summertime, or a different environment.
Yeah, in the winter you do have, you tend to have more movement of the air, and that cleans it out a little bit. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in Copenhagen. There's no easy answers. There is a cost to everything. But we as a society have to make a decision. Do we want to go and continue to forget about the long term of changing the planet? Just the air that you breathe today. Do you want to have that cleaner or not? And some of the things that we've done in the city, life expectancy in New York City is 15 months greater than it was 8 years ago. Just take 8.4 million people, multiply it by a year and a quarter, and divide by the average life expectancy. That's the number of man years whose lives have been saved.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It really is. You met with the governor-elect from New Jersey this week.
First time I'd met him. Nice guy. Going to have a very tough time, as are all governors. There's not enough money. The state of New Jersey isn't any different than the state of New York or state of California. Whether they handle it better or not, we'll see. But the governor was elected because the people wanted a change, and he's going to have to deliver it. And he certainly, we did a press conference together in City Hall, and he was asked tough questions, and he said, look, this is what I was elected to do. This is what I'm going to do.
Was his attitude any different about the Port Authority than John Corzine?
We just started talking. We did spend some time, and it really our staff has got to brief his staff. But keep in mind, since 9/11, people say, why is the development of the World Trade Center site going so slow? This is the fourth governor of New Jersey that we've had to work with, and we've had to work with three governors of New York. So seven different governors.
That's
during
what you call efficiency.
And each one, rightly so, wants to get their hands around the problem, understand it, bring in their people. The Port Authority reports not to the city of New York and its mayor, but to the state of New York and the governor, and the state of New Jersey and its governor. And it's not a reason to walk away in despair, but it just is one of the reasons why this is so complex.
What are they telling you most recently about the World Trade Center site?
The construction of the memorial is on budget, on schedule, for opening and being used at the memorial service that we will have on the 10th year anniversary of the tragedy. The Freedom Tower is going up. There's lots of people working on it. The Easton Bathtub has been dug out. The Deutsche Bank building has been fully decontaminated and is now coming down. There's a couple thousand people working on the site every day. We have not yet really come up with an economic solution between the private developer and the Port Authority and all of the other needs. But Bob Lieber, my deputy mayor for economic development and reconstruction, has been working. And I think it's fair to say that there's been a lot of cooperation from the port, from Larry Silverstein, from all of the different state agencies in the city. And I'm optimistic that we will at some point here, maybe not tomorrow, but we will come to a resolution and go ahead. We cannot leave a hole in the ground. And remember, it wasn't that many years ago when everybody's screaming, let's build it now, get it going. We're going to rebuild the Twin Towers and all that sort of thing. And they didn't understand the complexity of it.
I don't think anybody did.
But we're still going ahead. We're not walking away from it. We've just got to do this. And it's the right thing to memorialize those that lost. But to me, as importantly, or maybe more importantly, is to teach our young people how fragile freedoms are, that there are people around the world that don't like us to have them, and they're willing to take them away from us if we don't maintain our guard. As I said before, we didn't learn anything after 1993 with the bomb. I'm determined that we learned something after 9/11.
Mr. Mayor, I want to thank you for making the effort to come up here to Grand Central Terminal this morning. I really appreciate it.
Easy subway ride back to City Hall. I'm happy. You know, I can get right on the Lex from here.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show at Newstalk Radio 710. WOR. Joe Bartlett, I think we've done pretty well by ourselves today, but not through our efforts, but the efforts of our listeners.
Absolutely right. And to everyone who donated, a thank you. You can be assured that your money is going to be put to great use. 89 cents of every single dollar goes right back to our local community. And here's the telephone number again. Please keep it in mind if you've missed an opportunity this morning because you were busy. This number is going to be operational for quite a while, most of the day. 800-234-1710.
And again, online, you'll be able to donate to our digital Red Kettle right through the Christmas season. It will be up. We would encourage you to do that. When you get yourself some time, go on there. And, of course, there are auction items that will be open till 8 o'clock tonight. Some great auction items that will be up there and available through 8 p.m. Again, I just need to thank each and every one of you that have donated here this morning. It's a personal thank you because I view you as a friend, as my world, our community, and the Salvation Army helps that community. So thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. And again, a thanks to the folks here at Grand Central Terminal for helping us out here. JJ, thank you very much.
Happy Hanukkah,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, happy. That's right. Hanukkah begins at sunset tonight. Joe, thank you very much. Al and Figs and everybody else for the Army and for WOR. It's 10 o'clock. Have a great weekend.